all of us. Everyone at the State's Academic Medical Center. All working together to deliver complete care now and for generations to come. All over the state, including hospital and clinic locations from the Delta to the Gulf Coast. All for one reason. You, the University of Mississippi Medical Center. All for your health.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit provides information on how you can lead a healthy lifestyle. I'm the host, Josie Bidwell. Search for and subscribe to Southern Remedy on any podcasting app to not miss any episode.
Good morning, and thanks for being with us today on Relatively Speaking. I am Dr. Susan Buttress, and I'm here with my producer, Abram Nanny. And today we're going to talk about anxiety, but particularly anxiety about having perhaps someone in your life who causes anxiety every time they enter the stage with you. We'll also talk about general social anxiety. And I want to get to that in a minute. But before I do, Abram, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Doc?
I'm well. I really wanted to just say a word or two about Professor Gershwin.
Absolutely.
You know, I have maybe met him in person one time over the years that he has done the radio show. But I feel like we are neighbors, next door neighbors, because every Tuesday as I have driven into the studio to come here, I listen to Professor Gershwin. And I just say I'm going to so miss my next door neighbor. He is an amazing individual with an incredible fund of lawyer knowledge, and I have learned so much. And he has always been so kind to callers and respectful. And I think he's taught people a whole lot about law in Mississippi. So I think he will be very missed. I know our new host is going to be marvelous. He is also very bright and will be wonderful. But I just had to say that Professor Gershwin will be missed a lot. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was 11 years recently that he had been doing legal terms. So if you don't know what we're talking about, the show before this that airs on MPB Think Radio, the show before Relatively Speaking on Tuesday at 11, Tuesday at 10 is in legal terms. And we just said farewell to our co-host who had been doing it for 11 years and welcomed in a new one. So thank you, Professor Richard Gershwin.
Yes. Okay, well, let me set the stage about what I really want to talk about today. Anxiety is truly a common emotion and does not always morph into a disorder. We can talk about all those anxiety disorders today, but I just wanted to say it's not always a disorder, and in fact, some anxiety can be good for us. When anxiety, though, interferes with happiness, it may be something that needs to change. There may need to be an intervention somewhere. So there are many things that can cause anxiety, phobias, fears, worries about what might happen. But what happens when there's a person, a someone with whom you have to regularly associate who causes you anxiety? What do you do? Are you stuck with those feelings of dread every time you have to be there with that person? So today I want to talk about what that is, how that feels, and then perhaps a plan of what you can do to help yourself navigate through it if this is an individual that you really want to stay connected to for whatever reason. It may be the reason that this is a person who is necessary to be there because they're your boss. But what do you do about that?
And also with this type of topic, you might not want to like say your name or where you're calling from or anything, even though that's something we typically do with our call screener. So if you want, Marissa's in there. You can say, I don't want to go on the air. Just want to say, I have this comment. I have this question. I have a story or something. And how can you help with that?
Absolutely.
I know for me, there are some people that give me anxiety in life. And I don't want to just put that out there. But yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Or you can give a false name and a false tone.
Yeah.
That's always fine. So, and, or you could talk in a different accent if you'd like.
Oh, that would be fun. I'm sure we'll have some interesting.
Some British accent,
yes,
or something.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. First, let's talk just a minute about anxiety and what it is. I think probably most of us know what it is. At least what the feeling is. It's that feeling of unease, a worry or fear. It can be mild or severe. It can cause your heart rate to go up, your blood pressure to go up. It can sort of cloud your thinking at times and can even make you feel like you're in that fight or flight mode where you just want to get out of here and leave. And that is something, like I said, and we've talked about this many times over the last many years on this show, it's a protective response. And, you know, back in the cave days, it was a necessary response so that if something came before you, your heart rate, your blood pressure went up, and it allowed you to be hyper alert about that specific thing that was perhaps endangering you. But now it can interfere with your thought process, and it can sometimes undermine what's going on in your life, and it can ultimately cause health problems, because if you stay in that hyper alert mode all the time and your blood pressure and your heart rate are up a lot, it releases blood sugar when you don't need it. It causes other problems and can put you at risk for heart disease, diabetes, and other things. So just to say, if it morphs into a real disorder, it's not a good thing. Now, I want to talk also very specifically about a disorder that we have not talked a lot about, and that is social anxiety disorder. Not shyness, but true social anxiety disorder. And that is actually defined by our trusty Bible of psychological psychiatric disorders that you've heard me mention if you've listened to this show before. It's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It's now in its fifth, actually sixth permutation. The fifth edition had some tweaks to it. But if you ever need to just Google definitions of different mental disorders, it's a good one to take a look at. I use it often still because there have been definitions that have changed a little bit. But let me tell you about social anxiety disorder. It is an intense and persistent fear of being watched and judged by others, not by a single individual, but by people in general. So I think you've heard of phobias and, you know, like agoraphobia, the fear of being in open spaces, or claustrophobia, the fear of being enclosed spaces. But social anxiety disorder is the fear, really, of being watched and judged. And I bet there are some people out there who who this has affected. And perhaps what can happen when you have social anxiety disorder is it can really be very restricting. It can keep you from going out into groups. It can interfere with your ability to work with others. It can interfere with your ability to make friends. And if you think about it, for obvious reasons, if you're always worried about somebody judging you by the way you talk, act, look, speak, walk, then it can really be pretty paralyzing and interfering. And Abram, I don't know. I think we all probably at some point in our lives worry a little bit about what other people think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like everyone's got that fear of being judged to some extent, but there, for some people, it is oppressive how bad their fear of being judged or looked at or viewed as different or anything like that. For some people, it is very, very aggressive.
Right. Aggressive is probably the right word because it can really eat away at your life by, you know, interfering with your ability to go to a job interview, interfering with your ability to go out to a party. And it can even pervade into a family situation if you truly do have social anxiety disorder, it really can cause problems even within the family.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not talking, would you call it a social anxiety disorder if you just are focused on one individual who causes the anxiety?
Right. I wouldn't say so.
No. Right. The answer is no,
yeah.
Because it's an individual who, for whatever reason, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, it's an individual, and it's not a generalized situation. So, you know, as we are going through this, I'm, like I said, happy to talk about any anxiety disorder, but I want us to step through this as we're moving along also. We have a caller. Why don't we, before we go to our first break, go to our first caller. We have Andrew in Pearl. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling.
Yes, ma'am. I had a question. Well, call me about anxiety.
Sure.
Like, what if anxiety really affected somebody? Well, their life, but not them personally, you know, as far as them being okay with it, but just their family not.
Oh, so you're saying, you're asking, is this you personally or
yeah,
just?
Yes. Okay. I had been out of the house in about 10 years.
Okay.
I have family, I have kids, and they, you know, of course they take care of me, you know, they bring me what I need.
Mm-hmm. So you say you're okay with that because you're more comfortable not going out. Is that it? What happens? So the last time you left your house was when? Do you know the date?
Oh God, no. Like that, roughly 9 to 10 years ago.
Okay,
I'm disabled. I'm totally blind.
Uh-huh.
I kind of stay out of the way. Yeah.
Okay. So do you what happens when you leave? Do you remember that last experience? What happened?
Oh, I can't. It's like I can't stand up. If I'm in a public area, it's like I just want to fall onto the floor, like just be swallowed by the floor.
Mm. So intense anxiety.
Yes.
Have you always been visually impaired, Andrew?
Oh, no. I was in an accident when I was a teenager.
Okay. And did you have that agoraphobia before?
I was more of an antisocial kid anyway. Yes.
So you had a tendency. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, well, Andrew, I know being visually impaired is one of those things that is probably laid another layer on top.
Extremely.
Right, right. And so you're in the comfort of your own home where you know where everything is, you can navigate through, right, and you're able to do that. But what that does do is give you a very restricted life. And I'm sure your children and your other family members and loved ones would love to see you come out and be with them. Yeah. And I will say, too, Andrew, interesting that you mentioned this, because I was just reading an article that's a little bit related to what you're experiencing, and that is the health benefits of being in a diverse environment, having some diversity in your life. There's some major health benefits to that, positive mental health benefits and positive physical benefits. And for your kids who love you, they want you to have good, positive health benefits. And so, you know, how do you deal with this? What do you do? Probably the very best thing to do is to consult a professional. But let me give you a couple of tips that might be helpful. One, whatever, if you can do a first outing, and I will say sometimes a first outing, I don't know, do you go outside?
At nighttime, late at night, I walk a lot at night.
Okay, so that's a step. You can go outside. So for many individuals, the first step is to go out on the stoop or the porch. Oops, looks like we just somehow got cut off from Andrew. But Andrew, if you're still listening, I'm going to talk about gradual moves. So, for example, number one, to get in a car and have someone drive you, just drive you around for whatever you wish, 10 or 15 minutes, and then take you back home to the comfort of your home and let you first experience that. I would recommend the next step after you get comfortable with that. You don't move quickly, but you move very slowly through this. The next step would go to a place where there are limited number of people and individuals that you're very close to who can help you navigate, make it something simple and a short visit, knowing there's a finite time, so 30 minutes at the most. Get comfortable with something like that, and then moving through gradually. Like I said earlier, I think having some sort of impairment, like a visual impairment, certainly adds another layer, because you want to feel safe, and you can't always see what's there, but you have the vision of other individuals who can help you out. The other question I was going to get to with Andrew, and if Andrew would like to call back and talk through this further, we certainly can. The other thing that you could do is look into a service dog. I know they're relatively expensive, but there's some grants out there too to think about getting a service dog, because to me that would add a layer of safety and security for you too. And you know, again, Andrew, I appreciate you having the confidence and courage to call in and talk about that question. But I would say for your own health and well-being, it'd be good if you could work through this. those social situations when you may become just highly anxious and have difficulty going out, putting yourself out there. So if this affects you on a very regular basis, and if it interferes with your life and your ability to join in with other people, you may have social anxiety disorder. It actually usually starts during late childhood. And people may think that it's just extreme shyness and, you know, or just avoidance of particular situations. But it's more than just shyness. Shyness is an introverted individual who just doesn't need a big group around, but can navigate through job, can navigate at a party, may not be the, quote, life of the party, but an individual who can deal with gatherings and is not worried internally about other people judging them and causing those extreme reactions that happen to individuals with social anxiety disorder, blushing, sweating, trembling, rapid heart rate, feeling that their mind is going blank. You know, many times those individuals are those who in a social situation can't seem to come up with an answer to a question. But when they're at home in a comfortable zone, are very easy to converse and able to talk. So those type reactions. Now, I think, you know, I'll just full disclosure here. People think that I am this outgoing extrovert all the time, but there are times when I go into a new group and I have to bolster myself and take some deep breaths to walk into a room of, you know, relative strangers. In a social anxiety disorder, it doesn't have to be a stranger to cause anxiety, okay? And so what do you do? Now, the other thing that I wanted to get to is that this is not social anxiety disorder if there is an individual who regularly causes that heart rate to go up or your blood pressure to go up or your mind to go blank. And when they make a comment, you can't even come up with a return. Have you ever had that?
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Doc, we could just sit here, me and you talk about it for a long time because I definitely experience a good bit of, I wouldn't say full on social anxiety, but situational anxiety mm-hmm. in social situations, certain social situations.
Right. And that's exactly the right way to put it. So those are those instances where there's a particular individual that's more situational. And that's one of the times when I would highly not recommend considering medication for that. Those are the kinds of situations where behavioral intervention, you know, some talk therapy about what's going on in your mind is why, and why is that individual causing significant issues. Now, another form of social anxiety disorder is that performance anxiety that comes out. So some people with social anxiety disorders are okay around people and maybe not do have a specific person or not that enhances the anxiety. But particular social situations that occur, for example, public speaking or public singing or any other kind of performance anxiety where you have that fight or flight phenomena and you shut down. So all of that can influence your life and what you do. So again, Abram, I think both you and I probably could tell our personal stories about individuals who do tend to make it harder for you to really even think through how you would respond.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, there's many situations that I could just list off situations that I wouldn't want to be in, or, you know, maybe some people, or, you know, anything like that. There's several things that give me anxiety without it being like a systemic or, you know, full on mental problem.
Yeah. Are there some situations where you feel it so consistently that you would like to make a change?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so that, again, anxiety we all feel. I think I will say, and I've read over the last several years that if 30% of people in our population are saying that they have anxiety, is anxiety abnormal, or is this just normal life? And the answer is, it is normal up to a certain point. And then if you're not able to live your day-to-day life, then it's not normal. So, for example, our first caller with agoraphobia and hasn't been out of his house, even though there were some situations that we clearly could understand the fact that it contributes to, it is something that is certainly interfering with his day-to-day life and is causing probably worry and concern from people who love him. And so to make sure that you don't accept things as normal if they don't have to be normal, and if you have restricted your life. So as we move through this, if you're living with anxiety and it's seeming to ratchet up, and I'm talking to you, Abram, but I'm talking to our listeners too, there's a big chance, a really good chance, that we are doing some things, making some mistakes that are allowing us to continue in that anxiety state when we're around certain individuals or when we are in certain situations. And it doesn't have to mean that it's a disorder. It means that there are ways. So those 30% of people out there who are dealing with anxiety, and we know it's allegedly more common in women than men, but I have a question, especially the social anxiety that we're talking about. I often question that I wonder if it's just that men don't admit it. I think men like to perhaps discuss their feelings less in general than women. And so, listeners, I'm throwing that question out to you. What do you think about that? Do you think that the disorder is truly less common? Or do you think that perhaps men are uncomfortable admitting that they may have an emotion like anxiety? I wonder.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think I've always, I can definitely tell you that many men would view having anxiety as a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially, you know, certain demographic of men would feel that way. But I think that probably so, that I feel like it is more common in men than statistics would say.
Right. And I even, to go a little bit further, and again, I am not a man, but I'm going to ask this question to our listeners too. Do you think that like I asked, men would less commonly admit that anxiety emotion, but do you think it's also related to certain ethnic groups where even more so men cannot admit an emotion like anxiety or depression? Wonder. Thanks for being with us on Relatively Speaking today. We are talking about social anxiety, anxiety disorders in general, and then those people who make you feel anxious in your life that you are around and you want to do something about it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the bad habits that we do that if anything, enhance the anxiety that we feel in any situation. So you may not even know it, but you're enhancing the anxiety. So one of the first negative things that we do is we don't sleep well. Now, you've heard me on this show talk about sleep. You've heard it on Healthy and Fit. You've heard it on other shows. Sleep is needed. And if you don't sleep well, you don't think well, and you don't manage your emotions very well. So other than just to say, know that sleep is important, I'm just going to give a couple of tips of what you can do to perhaps make sleep a little bit easier. Work on creating a boring routine before you go to bed. Okay? Just making sure that you are doing something that's very calming and not stressful. One of those boring routines would be to stay off any instant messaging, stay off your phones, don't talk to individuals who may increase your stress. That may mean not answering a text that somebody, don't even look at it, because what that can do, if there is an individual who is causing difficulty in your life, that you need to clear your mind of that individual, and that means not talking, not texting, not emailing, all of that. And I think that's one of those things that we often do, right? Even if you go, well, I'm not going to answer that text, you still read it.
And, oh, yeah.
And what does that do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was terrible about it in high school. Mm-hmm. Like, I would stay up on my phone in my bed for an extra hour and a half, 2 hours. Just, you know, responding to people, talking to people.
Mm-hmm. And it might not have all been good, right?
No, absolutely not. Even if it was good, it was keeping me awake and keeping me from sleep. So ultimately, is it really good?
Right. So, well, you know, just like we were talking with Dr. Michael Nadorf at our last show, if you want to set a good night's sleep, you have to set it with positive thoughts before you go to sleep. And so, okay, so that's number one, probably bad habit that we all have. Okay, bad habit number two, thing that we should not do if we're trying to get ourselves through these social situations, is the use of stimulants or depressants to help ourselves get through it. And I'm not talking about antidepressant medicines. I'm talking about things like alcohol or like marijuana, using those things to help ease us through social situations that make us anxious. You know exactly what that does. It is self-medicating and not allowing you to work through learning how to control yourself. So you're more likely to become dependent on something, whether it's truly addictive or not. You're pushing yourself through teaching yourself, okay, before I go to this party, I have to have a couple of drinks. Or if I'm going to deal with this situation, I'm going to have to smoke some pot. I just can't deal with this otherwise. And so to if you find that to get through social situations or to get through dealing with an individual that you're having to self-medicate like that, then you need to do something else about that.
So would the reverse of that be true then? So if you're you know you're going into a stressful situation, would you need to sit down, you know, maybe try to relax in the bath or maybe go work out right before it or something like that, something to induce some more positive thoughts?
Exactly. Exactly what we need to do is to learn what it takes to calm. Now, you mentioned, and I know everybody rolls their eyes when we talk about exercise releases stress. It releases stress. It makes a huge, huge difference.
I think I rolled my eyes when I said it myself.
I think you did. But it is very, very therapeutic. And if you talk to, you know, I have several friends who do Pilates on a regular basis, and they tell me that it makes them feel like a whole different person. I feel the same way about yoga. When I go through a whole session, I always feel calmer and better able to deal with things. Whether or not my body is more fit, my mind feels more fit. And so, yes, I think that is something that's really, really important to do. Now, another habit, and you know, our first caller mentioned this, is that if you're more comfortable not doing something that makes you uncomfortable, then you succumb to that inactivity. You succumb to not doing it. And so that alone is destructive. And I think, listeners, you know why that's destructive, right? Because it reinforces you. Okay, I got anxious about going out. I got anxious about dealing with those people. And so I didn't. And now I'm calmer. And so it's just easier not to. I think that built a lot during COVID. People just realized, well, it's so much easier. I don't have to worry about what I wear, what my hair looks like. I don't have to worry about whether I'm overweight or not or underweight. I don't have to go out because they're saying not to. And then it reinforced those individuals who had social anxiety disorder or agoraphobia or other issues such as that. And so now I do believe that we've had that grow. So again, the way you deal with that is to make yourself take baby steps. Tell yourself, we talk about this a lot during the holidays when there's so much going on and some people just have trouble with it. Give yourself a finite time if you're going to go out. That is more doable. So, okay, I am going to go out for 30 minutes. I'm going to go to that party for 30 minutes. I'm going to meet and greet people. I'm going to tell them how nice it is to be there. I'm going to make myself deal with this. And then I give myself permission to leave after I've been there, 30, 45, whatever it is, whatever is appropriate. But those baby steps are very helpful, and it'll give you a sense of accomplishment. And if you went to therapy, I'll tell you, that's exactly what a therapist would do. They would give you ways to deal with this, ways to sort of desensitize you on a gradual basis.
So how, because for Andrew, our first caller, he was blind. How do you incentivize something when it's so, like, it makes so much sense to not go out? Like, for him being blind, or I think he said he was at least partially blind, legally blind, mm-hmm. but I think he might have been fully blind. I know for me, like, I don't understand the situation, but I can't empathize because I would not go out in public with my eyes closed. Like I just like would not be comfortable not seeing. So how do you incentivize something when it's so trivial?
When it seems like it. Yeah.
Right.
So it may be he said it at the beginning of the call. There were people in his life that he clearly cared about, or he wouldn't have called about this, who are concerned and want him to be different, to do different. They want him to enjoy their side of life too. And that can happen. You know, he mentioned there are many people who are visually impaired who live very full lives and deal with the accommodations that have to be made. And, you know, I will say, to, you know, make sure that the environment is safe. And I understand his feeling the need for safety. But I think the reward would be to give the pleasure to those who love him. They are doing for him. That would be one way to give back to them, to say thank you for doing this. Now, to in return, I'm going to work very hard to be able to go to your place. These are the things I need to make me comfortable, but I really would like to please you. I do think to keep in mind, I hear what you're saying, Abram, but at the same time, to keep in mind, if you get too internally focused on only what makes me feel comfortable, it's not good for you. It's not reinforcing to others. And eventually, there will be a loss of certain friendships and others when it's all giving to that individual and nothing is ever given back. And to give back, I'm not talking about monetary things. I'm not talking about, you know, any kind of material things. I'm talking about giving back an effort that you deem them important enough to make a step to try to do something for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, you explained it really well. Like, the incentive is to bring joy to other people by you being there.
Yeah.
So when you see, like, you know, when your 2-year-old sees that they came, or your 2-year-old granddaughter sees that you came to their birthday party, or, you know, you went to the graduation, you know, you make these steps and you attend these events. You say, this is important to me. And that's what the goal is.
Exactly. My grandchildren, they ask me to go to their games, their choir performances, whatever, their plays. And I go whenever I can. Is it always because it's convenient and easy for me? No. But it is because I know that better than a present, better than candy or cookies, my presence is, as we say, my presence is their present. And so to keep that in mind, that is a major form of giving. It's just like what we do for people when they're going, you know, going through a very sad time, like a funeral. You know, you go, probably not because you think that person who died is going to be grateful that you went. You are going for the people who experience the loss. And you may just be going to be present to let them know and not to see anybody else other than just to reinforce that. So that is another huge reason to work through the social anxiety disorder piece, is that it takes away a major form of giving and giving back that you can do for people. It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
kind of hard.
I mean, it's hard to view it as like not a, because I mean, to say that, oh, I'm here, you're welcome, like sounds like such a bad thing, but it's I'd say it's probably less self-centered thinking that than it would be to think that I would rather be at home, so I'm going to stay at home.
Right. And, you know, I think how many listeners out there had parents, perhaps, who are or a spouse or a sibling who maybe had social anxiety disorder and never went to anything. I mean, maybe some of us had parents because our parents were working all the time and they never went to anything. But there are many out there, I would bet, who experienced having a mother, probably more commonly than a father, but a mother who wasn't able to step out of her comfort zone and so missed out on a lot. And that, to me, that is difficult for children, for sure, to understand, and exceedingly hard on other family members, I think. So, you know, this kind of morphs into the other bad habit that we do is it turns you into a victim, right? The mindset that, oh, you know, everybody, I can't do this. It's too hard on me. I'm not able to step through this. I can't go into therapy. And so you become that victim. And so it, again, just like we were talking about sort of that selfish act, it's internally turning. And you're not thinking about anything external. So it turns you, sorry to say this, into a more selfish person. So, you know, that victimization piece of it is also destructive. So, again, I know we just have another minute or so, but it's one of those things that you want to make yourself start thinking about how you can enhance your life and how you can enhance others' lives. And then if you can think about the happiness that you can cause by changing your behavior, I don't think most people with social anxiety disorder think about how it affects other people because you do so much internalization. So really important to think about the external step through steps and see what you can do. And if you're not able to intervene upon yourself by trying to step through it, I would encourage you to reach out and ask for help. All right. Well, I know we didn't talk a lot about those specific individuals, and maybe we can do that for another show. If you'd like to hear this show or any other past episodes, you can listen to the podcast on your favorite app by searching Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking. Southern Remedy is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio, and funding is provided in part by grant from the University of Mississippi Medical Center and from support for listeners just like you. This show is a production of MPB Think Radio, engineered by my producer, Abram Nanny, and our call screener, Marissa. Thank you. I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, and I hope you'll join us next Tuesday at 11 for Relatively Speaking. And stay tuned for NPR's Here and Now, coming up next, right here on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.